Hello there, brave souls. Welcome to Trauma is Expensive with your host, Micah Bravery. Here, we don't just talk about trauma. We count the cost and we make the change. With every episode, we dive deep into the heart of trauma, its implications, and the resilient transformations it can ignite. Through conversations, insights, real stories, and unflinching honesty, this podcast is here to empower every survivor to turn their pain into progress. So let's take a journey together as we understand, confront, and finally heal. Welcome to www.traumaisexpensive.com, your platform for change. Now, let's get started.
What is up, my future, look, my fellow earth dwellers? This is Micah. I am here with producer Crystal and our special co-host today, Jonathan Neisel. And we're actually going to have a conversation about addiction. So before we get too far into it, Jonathan was featured in an episode of These Fucking Feelings podcast. We'll put that link so you guys can check out that episode. But we're still going to get him to introduce himself a little bit, and then we'll go from there. So take it away, Jonathan.
Hey, everybody. So first, let me start out by saying that I've lost my voice. I don't usually sound like this, and you'll hear that on the last podcast. But yeah, I'm in the process of getting my voice back. Had a great time recording with them last time. I'm really glad to be back and get the opportunity to help co-host and talk about something that is very personal and I have a lot of experience with. This topic. So I'm very, very blessed and appreciate the opportunity to come on here and get more in depth and just kind of have a nice conversation and see my favorite, blonde bombshell producer.
Okay. So, yeah.
Any excuse for that, but yeah, I'm really glad to be here. Good to see you, Mike, and, looking forward to it.
No blonde bombshell for me, dang.
Okay, Brown.
All right. Yeah. But you really did lose your voice. You over there sounded like you've been smoking for the last 86 days.
Seriously, just three packs a day, just hacking away.
Right.
Never would you like to start? But I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. I feel fine. I don't know. It'll come back when it comes back. I've just been told to be patient, so.
Right. Well, you know, it probably doesn't help that you keep using your voice either.
Yeah, doing all these podcasts, but, you know, I'm a trooper, just got to power through, so.
Right, definitely. So we wanted to talk about addiction today, and part of the reason I wanted to talk about it is because when people hear the word addiction, you know, they think of drugs and alcohol or sex, but it's like addiction can be a lot of things, and it can be a lot of small things like fruit roll-ups.
yes, you know. Micah has a fruit roll-up addiction.
It can turn into an
intervention very easily, but we'll stay on course.
It really, really needs to. You know what? My tooth started hurting the other day, and I was like, I don't know, fruit roll-ups might be time to give you up. I'm brushing my teeth too much.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, people think about addiction, and they think about, like, the big things. They think about, like you said, alcohol, drugs, illicit drugs, like you said, sex, but there are so many things that we can become dependent on. And there's different definitions of addictions. And I think that's an important thing too. Like, I find for myself, I have a very addictive personality. I have a genetic predisposition to addiction. And I find that if I'm obsessing over something or doing something that's starting to negatively affect my quality of life or, you know, just me in general, that's my addictive personality. That's for me, it's viewed as an addiction, and it could be excessive fitness. You know, it could be, you know, eating, it could be all kinds of things. And especially the fitness aspect, because, you know, being somebody who takes, you know, I love taking care of my body, love learning about the body, sharing my passion for that. But there, you know, you can take it too far where your body is saying, you know, enough is enough, but you have that mentality. I'm doing something good, quote unquote. It's good for you, but anything taken to that level. And I've had friends who've had sugar addictions. Like, I mean, I know we joke about your fruit roll-up, and it's not really a joke. I mean, we're here to help. Yeah. But
it's the truth. You say you're here to help.
Yeah. But I mean, legitimate, you know, sugar addictions. And it's a hard one because you have to consume food. You don't have to consume alcohol or drugs or things like that. You have to consume food. And there are sugar and, you know, different types of sugars and all kinds of things that we don't even know. So that's because it's where the slope becomes very slippery. And you're right. There are a lot of addictions. And I think I'm not a mental health professional by any means, but there's the OCD side of it as well, where
you took that right out of my mouth, because I was about to say, when you were talking about addictive personalities and you were describing things, I was thinking about, wow, that kind of sounds a little bit like OCD. Like, is there a tie between them? We're also not mental health professionals, we're just advocates, but we're seeking truth. We're truth seekers. So, but that was a good point. I was like, you took that right out of my mind. I was like, OCD, because I think, it can just be.
I think it's excuse me. I think it's a term that's used very loosely and very irresponsibly, where people are like, oh, I'm OCD. But it's a very serious affliction that people deal with, that it ruins or affects, or, you know, negatively, massively affects people's lives. And it's a mental condition.
Definitely.
I mean, I live clean and orderly and that's fine. But I think people need to be careful there, because people are really struggling with, and they have the routines and they can't, you know, live and function in normal life without going through these things. And yeah, I think it's all interconnected. And like we said before, it's understanding that addiction has a lot of different definitions and a lot of different faces. It's very different for a lot of people. You know, it's extremely, I don't think you'd find two addicts that are exactly the same. I mean, I just don't, you know, we all use different, we choose different substances, we have different patterns and all that kind of stuff. It's very unique, very individual topic.
Right. I always try to sit back and think, like, what would my addiction be, you know, other than fruit roll-ups? Because I feel like, you know, in a way, we all kind of have one.
I was going to say that. I think every single person has
an addiction to something. I think mine is, I like to be alone. And that might be a bad addiction, but I do not like being around people. Like, it's cool, I can do it for a podcast, but I know like an hour this is going to end and I get to go home and be alone.
He disappeared for a whole weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
I'm like, where is Mike? I was going to send FBI out looking for him and everything.
Hey, Jonathan, you ever had that time where you just needed the reset?
Oh, of course.
I just needed a reset in life. And my reset was to unplug.
Yeah.
So I finally put the cell phones down and the tablets down. And I kind of just had a weekend where it was just me and trying to figure out and filter through some heavy emotions I was dealing with, because this year has been kind of crazy for me personally and my family starting off. Yeah. I feel like that might be a negative thing, because I'd rather spend time alone than with people.
Right. I think resets are really important. I think a purposeful reset like you were doing is a very important thing. I used to do when I was using, I would have these resets, but it would be because I'd be going on, you know, drug binges or, you know, addiction binges, where I'd shut everything off because I'd be in my addiction and I'd go, you know, I'd be up for 3 or 4 days on Adderall and smoking weed and doing whippets and, you know, taking back pills and just shut the whole world out. And then I was resetting because I had to come out of my binge and come back to reality coming out, not with a clearer head, like what you're doing, like consciously, you know, let's put social media away. Let's put the phone off. Like, I think that's a very healthy thing to do, especially in today's world, to unplug and kind of just take some quiet time. I was doing the opposite kind of, it was a very negative reset. And I talked about this before, but I wasn't resetting from zero. I was setting myself back a little bit every time because I had to, you know, I had to get the drugs out of my system. I had to get, you know, now I've missed 5 days at the gym and I haven't been eating properly. And now, you know, I had to do that reset. But yeah, I think you're right. I think everybody has a propensity to lean towards something or lean on something in those times of, ooh, like I kind of feel like, you know, it's been a hard day, or, you know, like this makes me feel a certain way. And yeah, I think it's when it just flips over to the negative side. But I think, Crystal, you're absolutely right. I think everybody definitely has something that we're all kind of dealing with.
Now, do you think that there is functional addicts and non-functional addicts?
That's a great question. I mean, I've thought that I was a functional addict. Looking back, definitely not. Because, you know, in talking about the cost of addiction, let's just, you know, for me personally, everything around me, my finances, my relationships, my friendships, my family, my ability to be somebody who can be counted on, all that was crumbling around me. And I thought, you know, I'm putting on a good face and I'm good, but I don't know that there can be, because I think the word addiction really means that hyper-focused ultimate, like it takes precedent over everything.
Right.
And I could manage waking up, going to train my clients, going to the gym, going to a shoot, you know, all that kind of stuff. And as soon as all that was over, it was get my drug of choice or get my addiction. And that was it. Like hobbies, didn't have them. Relationships came and went just as, you know, whatever, as, you know, depending on what kind of person I need around. But I think it's a tough thing to be a functioning addict. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, do you think that's a possibility, or you think that's something that is all encompassing?
I mean, I've known somebody that got up to work every single day. And of course they didn't do drugs the whole entire time of working, but then the same thing, they would come home and that's like on their mind the whole entire time, is they need that high.
I'm pretty sure it's probably on their mind all throughout the day too.
Right.
But yes. It's like,
or like, let's get this done.
Yes. But
would you consider that as,
I don't know, because it is a hard thing to say. It's like, because you're right, they're responsible addict in a way. It's like they're taking care of their business. However, they still have this thing that they put above everything else.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you're functioning, but you're still an addict.
Right.
That's a great point too, because even when I was doing all my stuff and being productive and constructive, I was still planning out throughout, you know, training my clients. I was thinking, okay, I need to go to this place and meet this person to get this. You know, I was thinking ahead of, you know, getting there. And you're right, I wasn't totally present. And then there's also the repercussions of the night before or the day before or whatever, like, you know, being hungover and not functioning at 100% and not being there, you know, fully, because you're coming off of or just, you know, getting some kind of a substance out of your system. And like, are we truly functioning at 100%? And I don't know. I think it'd be hard to say that it is. Yeah. I think it's a misconception.
Because if your mind is, of course, thinking about that, you're given what, that's like 95% of what you're thinking. You're giving 5% to your client.
Yes. Exactly.
Or to whatever your job is. And in some situations, it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you know, like a truck driver or even a nurse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually just met a nurse recently who was going through rehab. And she's back nursing now. But she was saying that she used to, like, give her patients, like, you know, morphine or whatever the injection she would give, and she would always like leave a little bit so she can go and like take it for herself.
Wow.
Yeah. The cool thing that I thought about that though is that she was really honest with the hospital she worked with, and they actually helped her find help.
That's awesome.
And that's kept her employed. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I feel like that's a lot of things that jobs are offering now. I know where we work is kind of the same thing. If one of my truck drivers came to me, and if one of my truck drivers came to me and said they had an addiction, I couldn't fire them. We would have to find them help. So I do think that's something that's kind of pretty cool.
Yeah, but I think it's great. I mean, I think it's just something that's going to compound. If you just cast that person aside, they're not going to get better. They're not going to, you know, find another job, or they're going to put somebody else at risk. And at least this way you guys are addressing. And I think I was talking about this earlier on a podcast. I think admitting is the first step to growing. It's not, it's not shame. It's not weakness. It's the first step that you're taking towards personal growth and, you know, admitting and coming to your employer. Like, man, like, I mean, I should have come to my employer a couple times, but Yeah, I think it's a very huge step, and it's a very courageous step to
definitely.
And it should
and it's a big part of healing as well as growing. Because usually, I feel like if you have an addiction, it's actually just a Band-Aid for something bigger that's going on in your life. And usually it's something that you're trying to either not feel or not think about.
Like cover up.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just my personal opinion. Now, once again, I probably, like I said, I probably do have an addiction somewhere and I just don't know what it is yet. But I feel like this, look, not that I want to have an addiction. I'm not saying that, but you know, I'm always, looking for my next stage in healing. So I kind of been in my healing process, and I'm going to say it's been a little over 2 years now that I kind of realized that I need to focus on loving myself completely. And I've been on that journey, but it's always these questions like, what am I missing? Or am I missing anything?
Yeah, which is a great thing, right? I mean, excuse me, to hold ourselves to a higher standard and to constantly look inward and to not like look in the mirror and be like, you're a piece of crap, you're doing a horrible job, but right. just to hold ourselves like accountable and be real with ourselves, because addicts are delusional. We are absolutely out to lunch delusional. We think we've got it all figured out. We think we're hiding it perfectly. We think that we're, you know, functioning perfect. Like, we are so delusional the whole way that we're doing life and lying to ourselves and right. everybody else around us, of course, but lying to ourselves and saying, I can quit whatever I want. I just like doing this a lot. Like every day, I just like coming home and getting, you know, messed up every day. Like, it's a very delusional place to live. So yeah, being very introspective and aware and checking in with yourself, I think it's a very healthy thing to do, but in a positive, like, you know, you're doing a good job, like, kind of way, not like a, like I said, like, you know, sometimes you need to be tough on yourself, but I think we also get too tough on ourselves at times, and we need to lead with grace with other people and starting with ourselves.
So. Definitely. That's a big thing. I have an issue with guilt, and it's because I feel guilty that other people aren't in the place that I am. Look, maybe that's my addiction, right? I feel like, okay, you find out that you can have peace on this earth. I figured that out. You know, I had a moment where I was at peace, and it was like, this is nice. I want to live here for a little bit. And then the phone rings and everybody else's world is like in turmoil. And I feel bad that my life is in a state of peace and the world around me is like burning.
Yeah, it's true. And I totally understand and sympathize with what you're saying, because we're so interconnected with technology these days, and we see what's happening around the world, and we see all these horrible conditions that people are living in, whether they're in our community, whether they're halfway across the world. And, right. you know, we are so lucky to be in the positions that we are. And yeah, it is a very guilty thing to feel sometimes, right? Like it definitely is. Like, to walk outside and not be in a war-torn country is, you know, it's a huge blessing that a lot of people don't have, or fresh water, or, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, I think we have to keep in kind of, we have to moderate that with what we can actually do and how much we can, you know, browbeat ourselves and really, like, you know, take that on, because, I mean, we can help, we can give to charities, we can do that kind of stuff, but we have to kind of moderate, just like taking in the news, the good news and the bad news. We have to kind of moderate and keep ourselves in a pleasant, comfortable place.
Definitely.
With all that. But you're right. It's easy to look and see people and see things and be like, what am I complaining about, man? Right. Like, what, like, dude, I've got so many things to be thankful. Like, man, like, it's that's a very good point.
So now, kind of getting back to addiction, do you think that most people know they're addicted to something?
Well, I think, like what Crystal said, I mean, that's what you guys were saying before. Like, I think there's a lot of denial with regards to that. And that's a slippery slope, because, again, I think addiction is very, and a very individual thing. And we all deal with it and, you know, have it like have different experiences with it and stuff. And, you know, for years, I didn't know that I was addicted. And then for years, I knew that I was addicted. Like a lot more years I spent like knowing that I was and not how to get away from it. But it's just a hard thing to say, right? I mean, it's the routines of, you know, going home and eating a sleeve of Oreos or going out for six or seven drinks on Fridays or whatever. I mean, it's really so individual. I think it's, and in looking up in preparation for this, trying to find stuff on statistics or things on people and their individual addictive habits, it's pretty much impossible because we're all individuals and you can't, you know, lump them in. I can tell you like how many, what percentage of people are addicted. And I found a lot of interesting stuff about that, like percentage of Americans and what we spend on it, that kind of stuff. But the individual thing is really that, like, I think addicts, I mean, we all have our different things and you're right. It's for the most part, I don't know, 99.9% of it is Band-Aids. It's avoiding our feelings. It's hiding from something. It's covering up something. But I think, you know, addicts all function different ways. And, you know, a lot of addicts will just be as addicted as they are financially allowed or as right. much as they can with their time or as much as they can get away with. And, you know,
that's the big one right there, as much as they can get away with.
Yeah, exactly. And having to sober up for work, like Crystal was saying, like, okay, going to go home, going to get, you know, wrecked, do this all night, get up, go to work and keep it together, quote unquote, while I'm thinking about that kind of thing.
Some people, that's the only way they can function. I know that my ex, his choice is heroin. And he went into rehabs, got out. I think it's more of if you want the help, then you'll get the help. But he got out and he wrote a letter one time and he said that he couldn't get through the day. He couldn't do homework or anything without getting high because it felt just normal to him to be high.
Yeah.
So he couldn't function if he wasn't high.
I know. I kind of feel like that's an excuse a little bit. But it's hard to say. It's really hard to say because I was going to bring up the fact that I know someone who's also struggling with the heroin addiction right now. And they are so ashamed about it. And it's like, if you feel that bad about it, why do you continue to
think it's do just, it? It's actually steals who you are. It just like you're just not even the person that you used to be.
Right.
Once you start doing it.
Yeah. It's your new level of like functioning or normal. Like you said, I mean, like you said, Crystal, like for him to not feel normal, that is his new normal. I mean, that's right. It. And I remember I said on the podcast before I smoked just way too much weed. And I was to the point where I was so embarrassed that I would go to different dealers to buy because I was embarrassed with how much that I was actually smoking. And they don't care. They're getting paid either way.
Right. They mad that you went to somebody else.
Yeah. In my mind, I'm like, it's embarrassing because I just bought an ounce off this person. And like 3 days later, I'm like, it's gone. So I got to go back to this other person. And, you know, like it was that embarrassment but I also just didn't have the strength and the fortitude to finally, you know, get to it and say, yeah, I'm feeling all these feelings and I'm ashamed and I'm embarrassed, but I can't kick it. And then until I finally could. And that comes with, you know, rock bottoms and dozens of rock bottoms. And
right.
A lot of us addicts talk about like the rock bottoms that we see on our journey are not necessarily anywhere near as bad or they're worse, sorry, than the actual rock bottom that gets us to stop. You know, we'll hit way lower bottoms and climb back out. And then it finally it could just be, you know, whatever it is that finally is the straw that broke the camel's back. But along the way, it's, you know, I flushed so many drugs. I, you know, dumped down like alcohol down the sink. You know, I did so many things where I was like, enough is enough. And then I just come back and come back and come back. And
now, what was it for you that made you realize that, hey, I need to stop or I need to get this under control?
Well, looking at like the fact that I've been doing it for 15 years and my life, I was 35 at the time and I was like, this is not the life that I'm meant to be living. I'm not living the best life, and I'm not thriving. I mean, I'm barely surviving. Forget thriving. You know, I'm making great money, but I've got the electric company calling to shut my power off, but I've got all the drugs that I need taken care of. And I'm in the highest tax bracket in Canada, but I'm barely putting food on the table, but I've got time for that. And it was like, I'm just not supposed to be doing this. And I need to rip these band-aids off and I need to, you know, see, like heal these wounds and as much as I can. Some of them will never be closed and some of them will never, but I need to like address them and not stop just putting band-aids on them and just dealing with the infection. I just needed to finally realize that this is not what I'm supposed to be doing and who I'm supposed to be. And I always say it got a lot harder before it got better, because a lot of those band-aids are, you know, nicely compartmentalized traumas that we've been through and stuff that we don't want to deal with. And it all comes flooding out, like it all comes rushing at you. And now you don't have a substance to dull or to just get rid of it. So it's really like feeling your feelings, like Crystal was saying about her ex and stuff. Like it's feeling the normal, the ups and downs of everyday life, which I love now, but at first was super hard, man. Like when you feel down, when you're not on drugs, you feel really down. But when you feel up, you feel really up and you're like, oh, this is what life is like. And now I love the ebbs and flows as opposed to just living in that gray banded, like, you know, middle area where whatever, that was cool, or oh, that sucked, whatever. Everything's just kind of in there. So,
yeah. Well, I don't want no downs. So you can go ahead and keep them and you can keep enjoying the ups and downs. I'm going to send you some of mine since you like it so much.
Yeah, right. If only.
No, I'm just, I kind of honestly, that's just what living is, right? It's like this big up and down. It's like we're never going to have perfect days. It's kind of the world we live in. You know, it's like our world is so, I like to say it's corrupted, but and maybe that's going a little too far, but I do. Like, I would not bring a child into this world that we live in today. That is something I won't do. My family is like, oh, you'd be a great father. And I'm like, yeah, but the world is fucked up. So there's nothing I feel like I could do that's going to stop this child's life from being fucked up, right? So no kids for me. And part of that is because of those crazy ups and downs in life. It's like, whew.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think like I have the same thoughts too, where I always wanted to be a father and I'm getting a little bit older now. And, you know, but I do think that, and I look at the world and I try and look at the positive and the negative. I think it's the craziest time to be alive, but it's also the most wonderful time to be alive. Like I try and really like keep that in mind, where that balance. But yeah, I mean, it's hard enough raising a dog in this society. I mean, but yeah, like I totally feel you, man. I totally feel you. And, you know, from what we were, raised in and seeing the world changing and everybody adapting to this all at the same time and having to parent in this. And then, you know, things it is pretty scary, but I don't know. I think it's important to focus on the positive and the negative and just being aware of both of them, you know, the awareness. It's kind of like what we talked about with regards to, you know, people who are starving around the world and can't get fresh water and stuff like that. Like, you know, we're aware and, you know, empathize and, you know, try and do what we can, but we have to also, you know, wake up and head out and go to our jobs and live our lives and, you know, do these things. So.
Right. Be the best person that we can be to everybody. I think that's my main goal in life. I just want to be the best that I can be to myself first. And then to everybody else.
Yep.
And hopefully every day will be better than the day before. And I deal with a lot of adversity. I was kind of just re-diagnosed with cancer. So, and I'm kind of in chemo and I've been counting down. I'm like 54 days left. But it hit me really, really hard. That was part of the reason why I had to unplug, because as I went through this huge battle and cool, you beat it. You know, I got to ring the bell and do my victory lap, and all the hospital people like, I hope I never see you again. And which is kind of rude, right? For people to tell you. But, you know, it's like you go through all that and then On Valentine's Day, it would have been my fourth year in remission. And in December, I was re-diagnosed. And it was like, what the fuck? Okay, like, God, we need to talk a little bit because I don't understand your plan. Right. But it kind of made me question everything. Like, even if there is a God, and I kind of had that struggle anyway. But it just goes back to kind of living in those ups and downs in life and trying to find your way through them. And I guess it would be a lot easier if I didn't have anything to numb it.
Right.
You know, so I guess it's like I never realized until you were talking about, you know, kind of just living in that gray area of life because you were always in that numb stage that you really didn't feel the highs or the lows. You just felt numb. And it's like, wow, once you're done with that, I can almost imagine the Mack truck of emotions that hits you when you don't have those Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids.
Big time. Big time. It's reality comes, like present day reality comes and hits you. And then it's all of the past stuff that you've been running away from and all the past stuff that you've just been like tucking away that comes. But that's, you know, that's really where the growth starts. And that's really where, you know, we start to heal and have to push through and get through that stuff. But it's definitely not easy, but it's so worth it. So, so worth it. It's everything.
I think that's a lot of reasons why people end up relapsing is because once they get to that point where they have to dig a little bit, then they're like, and they pull back and then they want to feel or not feel that pain of the issue.
Right. Yes. Or issues.
Issues, yeah.
Because that's usually what it is. Usually like a multitude of things and just feeling different. You know, it's like this world makes it hard to be different. It makes it hard to think different. It makes it hard to stand outside of the box. They tell you you should do all these things, but then when you do it, they make fun of you, you know? Okay. So it's like really, really hard. But, you know, of course, now we're going back to trauma is expensive. And, you know, addiction, I truly believe is caused by trauma. But I wanted to talk about some of the cost of it now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, I think that's the part that people forget, all of the things they're losing because of addiction, family life, love, real support, money, energy, time, your health.
Yeah. All that stuff. Self-respect, the respect of others. You know, those are big things that I lost in those years. And I was able to rebuild it with some people, and some people will always know me as that person. And that's okay. I've learned to realize that that's okay. We go through phases and stages in our life where we are our people, and you know, we're into, you know, punk rock music, and we, you know, I used to skateboard and whatever, like different phases like that, but also dark phases. And you know, you burn a lot of bridges, you act a certain way. And you know, I was talking about, because I pride myself on being somebody who's very reliable. And if I say I'm going to do something for you and I, you know, I'm there, but I became very unreliable and I lost a lot of people who, you know, they could hang their hat on. Jonathan said he's going to do X and, you know, I lost that, but yeah, the time, the money. I mean, for the longest time I beat myself up because of literally the hundreds of thousands of dollars that I've spent and the years that I've spent, you know, wasted I was wasted and I wasted the time. And it's just like, I would just think of like, man, I wish I could have that money back. But I talked to a friend of mine's father once and we were talking about that. And he said, look, if you put it this way, think about going to university for 4 years, right? And you go into you pay for school, you go into debt, whatever it is. You come out of it with an education and you spend a bunch of money. And I look at it that way, as I've come out of it with a lot of life lessons and I've spent a lot of money and time, and I can't go back and get that money. If you know how to, let me know, but I can't. And I wouldn't be the person that I am today without that, you know, without that. And you know, those lessons have made me who I am. Those hardships and those lessons and those, you know, lost friendships and those, you know, all that's made me who I am. And Yeah, that's the way I look at it now. But it is extremely expensive in so many ways. It taxes you financially, spiritually, emotionally. People be like, man, you just don't seem yourself.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. Because I was just numb. You know, I was just comfortably numb. I just wanted to live in that numb place. I'm like, yeah, it's good. And that just became my new personality. People just kind of expected it. And then when I got sober, it was like, oh, okay, you're back, or this is a new version of you. Like, right. There still is that light in there. There still is that person in there. And I was like, oh shit, yeah, I guess I just got used to myself being like that too. So yeah, there's a huge expense that and a huge toll that it takes.
And that's kind of deep, the whole, you just got to the point where that's what you expected from yourself too. It was like, you know, it was like, wow. Yeah. But to me, I think it has to be really hard when a person now looks at you a certain kind of way because of your past. And that's always how they're going to see you. You know, I see it now all the time in my family with, you know, people who have sobered up and, you know, it takes, you know, one person to see somebody. Oh, he looks like he's two steps away from another needle. And you're like, yeah. Damn, can he just like be sober in peace, please?
Like encourage him to get better.
And my thing, I feel like if we're family, it's important for me to kind of check in anyway. You know, if I know that, hey, you're my family, you're someone that I am supposed to love, and you're sober now.
Yep.
I should take it upon myself every now and then to ask, how are you doing? Yeah. Do you need anything? You know, is there anything I can help you with?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think
that's one thing we don't have in this world. We don't have, like, people don't support each other. You know, they'd rather show the video of you drunk throwing up in the toilet versus of you hounding out water.
Holding your hair.
Yeah. Because you get more views with the drunk, you know, falling in the toilet. You know, that's our society. But no, you're right. And I try and treat people as who they are in front of me. And knowing with my past and what I've come through, and the people who still look at me that way, they either aren't a part of my life, or if they can't get over that and see what the work that I've done and who I am today, then okay, that's fine. Like what people think of me is none of my business. Like, they can go ahead with that. But the people that look at me for who I am today and what, you know, how hard I've worked and what I'm doing and how I'm trying to be a better person, like we said, for myself first, for those around me, and then for society. And they can look at that and they can, you know, support and encourage that. Like you said, with family members, it's like, man, instead of like, you know, snickering about how he's about to, you know, go tie off in the bathroom, how about like giving him a, hey, it's great to see you're doing well. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
One of those instead. I think we have to push those out. But a lot of times addicts too are looking for that validation. You know, we're looking for, and I spend a lot of time trying to redo or undo the things that I've done. And like I said, some were, I was able to, and people stuck with me and stuck along for the journey. Some people didn't, and that's okay. That's, you know, I've known a lot of people in different times of their life, and they're probably not the same person now. And that's just the way it is.
It's one thing I actually just recently learned, and it was this lesson that I kind of did the same thing. I felt like in my life, I have done wrong to a lot of people. It's just kind of the way the world works. I was mean when I shouldn't have been mean. I was nasty when I shouldn't have been nasty. I turned my back when I shouldn't turn my back. But, you know, lately in realizing and growing is that one thing I can say is that I was always the best version of who I was at that moment. So if I turned my back on you, you were getting my best because that was the best that I can give you.
That's you.
You know, it's different now. Because I growed up, so I know now to handle a situation and not to be able to turn my back on you or not be able to curse you out and call you a sloppy bitch or, you know, not tell you. You know, it's pretty funny. I was on an interview with somebody. We were interviewing someone yesterday. It's not funny, but it's funny. And her son was diagnosed with some mental health disorders and she took it hard as a parent. And she kind of went into the situation where, like, she was bedridden for like a month.
Wow.
And it's like, bitch, if you don't get out here and feed your kid, you know what I'm saying? Like, come take care of your child. He hungry. He dirty. Look at his ears, behind his ears. Like, what's wrong with you, right? And my guest yesterday, she kind of corrected me and she was said, they're okay to go through that. Like, they're okay to mourn. Like, it's okay for them to have that time. And I never thought about it that way. Like, you know, I guess you do kind of need that checkout. Well, I don't know. I don't have no kids. So I feel like you shouldn't check out from your kids. But like, don't just leave him. He's 5 years old to fend for himself. Okay. Yeah. But once again, I'm not a parent, so I can't say that. But I did feel like she kind of smacked me a little bit and opened my eyes to the fact that people handle things differently and you have to let people go through their process. Yeah. You know, but it's a process. And I think that we get stuck in going through the process when, you know, processes are completed. And I think that's the part we miss, you know, yeah. Go through the process, complete the process, and let's move on to the next stage. Yeah. Like, stop processing the same thing for 86 years. Okay, I get that you're processing. That should be done already. You need to upgrade, trade your brain in, get the iPhone. No, I'm not going to advertise for iPhone at all.
No free ads. No free ads. No, it's true. It's true. And I remember I went on a cruise once with my siblings and my sister and her younger, my nephews and stuff like that. And I was like 21 at the time. It was a Disney cruise and I just wanted to be around my family, but I wanted to drink because I was 21. So I would just, you know, the kids would be doing whatever, having fun. And then you'd see the moms and dads who would sneak away from their families to, you know, take a couple shots or drink a couple beers to then be able to go back to. And you know, we're not parents. Crystal's a parent, but you and I are parents and we don't know how hard that is. But I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes where people are just trying to keep it together. Like They are really trying to like, and whether it's, you know, tuck the kids in at night and, you know, sit down with a scotch or, you know, light up or whatever it is. Like, I think there's a lot of that, going on. And yeah, I totally sympathize with it because I know that it can be that hard and I couldn't imagine having to keep children alive. And then, you know, but it's
me as hell, you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all right, hit record. This is a new episode. Crystal, take over.
If you wasn't such a, no, I'm just joking. Yeah,
but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there is that grief that you're allowed to have. And I think I always talk about, you know, everything has there's a lesson behind everything. And you know, you guys know this more than anybody. And we see the world similar ways that way. And no matter how hard it is, you know, we need to take time and feel those feelings, but to look back and look at that experience and be like, what am I taking from this? What going forward am I taking from this? Either to, you know, A, not make the same mistake, B, not be fooled by the same kind of people, whatever it is, you know, and, or things that are, you know, we don't bring upon ourselves, like, you know, you're struggling with cancer and, or losing a loved one or something like that. You know, it's really important to take that time and spend that time and to feel those things. And then, you know, okay, what's the plan?
Right. And I think grace is kind of a word you used earlier, but to me, that's a really strong word. It's like, we need to give ourselves grace and the people around us grace. And because look, there's no way to survive without it. You know, it's like, I don't think we're meant to be put on this earth to be miserable.
No.
You know, once I learned what peace was, I was like, what?
I'm like, there is no way.
But Crystal says that about work. She's like, there's no way that I should be spending my time at work.
Right.
No, Heffa, get to work. Okay. After's good.
So my brother, he was an addict. And unfortunately, he ended up mixing two different types of pills, what caused him to go in a coma. He used to say all the time, cause you could tell when he was high, he act different and he just didn't act like himself, but he went through the whole, like, I can quit anytime. I'm not addicted to it. Okay. I'm just doing it because it feels good. And now I don't want to say like we're picking up the pieces.
Right.
But now we go and visit him and he's like lays there and he don't move or anything. Yeah. So I think that everybody goes through that thought of,
I got it under control.
I got it under control until it's too late.
Right.
Yeah. It's the delusion. It all stems from the delusion of the addict, the addict's delusion of, and unfortunately it gets to awful places where, you know, with what your family's dealing with and with your brother, or, you know, people losing their lives and stuff. And, you know, we will tell ourselves and trick ourselves and convince ourselves that we've got this right as we are just crashing towards the ground, man. Like, right. We see the ground rushing at us and we're like, nah, I can pull the chute anytime. I can pull the parachute. I'll be fine. I can do it anytime. And unfortunately a lot of people don't. And it's extremely sad, but it's, I think it all stems from that delusion and that sickness. It's a disease, you know, it really is.
And I feel like that's one of the biggest costs of an addiction. Now the people that become consequences, you know, we become a consequence to your bad decision.
Right.
And now we have to figure out a way to do with this. And it's like, you don't know what it's costing me to be your brother or your sister.
I mean, as like that, him doing pills cost him not seeing his kids for the last 8 years, not being able to talk or see his family, or how many birthdays he's
missed,
lost,
right,
and Christmases and holidays, just for something that, I mean, we did try to get him through help and he just chose, I can stop it at any time.
You also think about too, like everything that your family's endured as well, like your extended family, like you, I mean, what you guys have had to deal with and how much time, effort, and, you know, emotion and everything you've put towards him and what he's dealing with and how that has that, you know, the effect, that just ripple effect that goes out from there. And it's
right.
It's not singularly the addict. It's those that are closest to us, and we hurt them the most, you know, the most. And, you know, like, you know, you're saying, Crystal, like all these things that he's missed out on and not been able to do. And, you know, the agony that comes from the family because of that, it's, you know, and, you know, I did that for a long time, and it really is, you know, again, it's why would we want to hurt? Okay. We can hurt ourselves. Fine. But why would we want to hurt those around us?
Yeah, and I don't think that people go into these things thinking about that.
No, of course.
I think that maybe we should start. Like, maybe this should be like a pattern. Maybe this needs to be our new addiction of calculating, you know, the pros and the cons of this decision I'm going to make, you know, or this thing that I'm going to do, or this thing that I'm going to try.
Well, I think that addicts know what it could cost them. Like, I used to watch what my ex, TV series where they go intervention every single night it was on, and we split up a couple years later. He's addicted to heroin. We watched that every night. You've seen what them people were going through.
Yeah. But you kind of go through that. I'll never get that bad phase.
I can control it.
I'm different than they are.
Right.
I'll never let it get that bad. Speaking of intervention, okay, I'm about to sound real judgmental, but did y'all see the episode of the chick that was like addicted to the canned air?
Yes.
The hairspray?
That's like, exactly what I said.
Like,
exactly.
And I'm like,
that's exactly what I thought you were saying.
My daughter's addicted to toilet paper.
Really?
Yeah.
She has to eat toilet paper.
Eat it?
Yeah.
Who?
Really?
Carissa.
Oh no.
I saw that on My Strange Addiction. Wow.
Yeah. So she had pica when she was like two, and she would constantly eat the toilet paper. And I asked the doctors. Doctor said it was fine, but she don't have it no more. But she still has the urge to eat it.
Right. Because like, it's a habit now. Yeah.
It became her walking past the bathroom. She goes in and grabs a piece of toilet paper. And I'm like, what's in your mouth?
What are you chewing on?
No, like,
unflavored gum.
Right.
It's the worst gum ever.
Only toilet paper, not like paper towels or nothing. Only toilet paper. Scott's.
Wow. That's fascinating. I think, like you said, Mike, it's really important to really take stock of that and to think about how things affect other people.
Definitely.
Is a really big thing. Like the same reason why, you know, we don't get frustrated on an escalator and kick people down the escalators. You know, we don't start just, you know, we hold back those intrusive thoughts, or, you know, we act accordingly, like, you know, we should in society.
Because, now, Jonathan, did you want to kick somebody down the escalator before?
Well, I lived in Manhattan, man. You know how it is in Manhattan. You just, you've got to, you know, well, it's.
I'll tell you a funny story. So they like remodeled LaGuardia. Yeah. And I was flying. I flew into LaGuardia on a Sunday, and they remodeled it. And I flew with Delta, and Delta has its own terminal. They have this escalator that has to be one of the longest. It is the scariest. I'm scared of heights anyway, right?
Yeah.
So you would want to kick my ass, because not only was I just standing there and not walking down like the other people, I'm gripping both sides.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm hold on, so you can't even get past me. People are like, excuse me. And I'm like, I can't move. I can't wait. We got to wait to the bottom. And it was like an hour long. I'm like, what the fuck? Who invented this escalator? Like, what is wrong with you people? So seriously, that person, I want to kick them down their own escalator.
Yeah, right? Whoever thought that up.
I know, yeah, right?
I just think it's important that we, you know, the same way that we, you know, practice great. You know, I don't get road rage anymore, because somebody cuts me off or something happens. I mean, I'm thankful that nothing, you know, knock on wood, right, anything too bad happened. And maybe that person's having a bad day, or maybe they're just not a good driver. Maybe they're really good at, you know, doing taxes or managing money or something that I'm not good at.
I think it's so rude when somebody like drives and then cuts you off.
It is.
So you have road rage.
Is it really that important?
So you have road rage, Crystal.
I mean, I don't say anything, but I'm like, that's rude. Like, my daughter just started learning how to drive. I know it's off topic, but she just started learning how to drive. And I don't know how many people go past her. And I'm like, she just started learning.
So get some student driver stickers
and
put them on your car, because you gotta realize, it's kind of like Jonathan said, you don't know what's going on in that car. Yeah. People don't know that she just started learning how to drive.
Yeah.
So you have to tell them, you know, I always say, I go into like this conversation about like non-binary people, you know, I'm in my 40s or whatever. So it's always been him, her,
right?
You know, she, he. If you go by something different than that, tell me. Now I know. You don't have to be offended right away. It doesn't have to be a fight because I assumed. I assumed because this is what I was taught my whole life, because this is how I grew up. So I wasn't born in the 2000s. See, I'm from the 1900s. Yeah. And in the 1900s, you know, you was retarded, you know? Yeah. So now if we can't say that word no more, like, explain to me why. Like, I feel like I should get that one get out of jail free card. Yep. That allows me to be ignorant when I'm really ignorant.
Yeah.
You know,
or you just we need to be explained so we can understand.
Right.
We need that
explanation. And it's not even that I have to understand. I just want, you know, it's like, if it matters to you, it matters to me whether I understand or not. Yep. But just tell me. Just tell me. No, I'll go by this, or I don't like that, or, you know, what you said is offensive. Like, you know, I feel like we go from 0 to 60 real quick. And then we're kicking people down the escalator, Jonathan.
Yeah, right. Allegedly. I will not admit to anything. I plead the fifth.
And it wasn't that you did it, it's that you wanted to do it.
Texas,
right?
Man kicks people down escalators. Like, what? He seems so level headed.
And yeah, it'd be an article that I write. These fucking feelings exclusive.
Exactly. Exactly. No,
I did want to kind of, and I said, I'm actually looking at the time now, and I said, we know his voice hurts, but we still going to keep him a whole hour. But
no,
I did want to ask you this question, right? Because someone asked me the other day, if I could change what I went through, would I? And you were talking about kind of what you went through made you who you are. Now, before I give you my answer, I want to know your answer.
Sure. I've been asked this before, and people ask me, like, because my story starts the day before my 21st birthday, for the most part, when my mom passed away very suddenly and unexpectedly. And then, you know, cut to 20 years later, here I am. They always ask me, what would you say? Not always, but I've been asked, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? And I would simply say, look, it's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard. It's going to last for a very long time. But you are going to get through it. And I wouldn't say, don't do this. I wouldn't say, don't do that. So I wouldn't say, don't go there. I would say, just know that you are going to get through it, because that was the most bleak and the hardest part for me was thinking that I'm never going to be okay. I'm never going to be normal. And as the years went on, just thinking like, I'm resigned to who I am now. This is who I am and I'm going to be. But I wouldn't change it for the world, because like you said, it's maybe who I am. And I would just say, look, man, it's going to be hard. Just don't give up. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to do a lot of great things. Just keep battling, but just know that you're going to get through it, and you're going to get to a place where you can be proud and you can keep learning, keep growing, and, you know, be in a good place. So that's what I would say.
Okay. How about you, Crystal?
I say the same. As he does, as your past made you who you are. And if you don't like it, you can only change it forward.
Yep.
Well, my answer was completely different. And I'm going to say, if I can go back and change all that shit, I'm with it. I'm changing everything. Yeah, mama, it's like, mama, I'm sorry that you may not be my mama again. Trust, I love you. But when I tell you my life has been that hard, I don't care how much it made me, I'm going to change that shit. Okay.
You could be like a miserable, like,
it's
man.
Right. It's like you have these things to consider, right? It's like, you can go back and your life could be worse.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take that chance.
Really?
It's the butterfly effect, right? Like, if we change one thing, then how much of it, like, if we change one decision, like one regret we had back then, how much of an effect does that have going forward? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I think Chris and I are on the same page where it's like, hey, let's not rock the boat. Okay. We got to where we are. Like, we've, you know, ups and downs, mistakes, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I go back.
You're still in a boat and I'm stuck with the Titanic.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know you from way back, but I know you now. And like, you're so perfect.
Oh, hey, you know what? We're going to end on that.
Yeah.
We're going to end on y'all.
That's what this whole episode's been about. We finally got to it. Man, it took an hour of just blabbing around. Finally.
The moral of the story.
Micah's perfect.
So, look, we invited Jonathan on to have a Jonathan takeover for me to find out that I'm perfect.
Yeah, you're perfect.
You think you're perfect.
I do. Actually, I do think that I'm perfect. But, Jonathan, I think that you're perfect too, because who can you compare yourself to?
Yeah, we're perfectly imperfect. We're our best version of ourselves. Like you said, and you said that very poignantly as well. Like, just know that if I was that way to you, I was doing the best with what I had at the time being the best version of what I had to work with. And yeah, I mean, it's we're just doing the best. And I think we have to stay in our lanes, because all of this comparison and all this social media stuff and all this, you know, this person's this old, why do they have this car? That all that stuff is like, you know, forget about it. Those people, be the best version of yourself and the happiest.
Easy for you to say with your six pack. No, I'm just joking. Trust. I'm fine with all my little fat. I've been skinny my whole life, right? I started to gain weight. I'm like, okay, I got an ass now.
Yeah, right.
Look, I went to the doctor the other day and she told me I lost weight. And I was like, oh, fuck that. I'm about to go to McDonald's.
Roll up. Let's go, baby.
Fruit roll ups. But no, Jonathan, we thank you so much, as always, for coming on. I feel like we're going to see a lot more of you. I heard a rumor that you're about to start your own podcast. I am definitely thinking there's something that you should do. So make sure you keep us posted on that. Yes. But I did want you to close with some words of wisdom, because this is the Jonathan Takeover. So go ahead and tell our Trauma is Expensive audience something powerful.
I would just echo what I just said. And that's been one of the biggest things that I've had to learn in life, and especially in modeling as well, is stop the comparison. Stop, you know, really try, really shut out the, you know, use social media as a tool and as a great motivator or whatever it is, but make sure that you're cognizant and aware of what the negative consequences of it are as well. And just focus on being the best person for that person in the mirror that you can be, and then push that out. And just really, let's practice grace with ourselves. And, you know, just the same way that we'll go hold the door open for somebody, then why don't we practice that same grace ourselves when we turn around and look in the mirror and say, man, you're a piece of shit. Let's skip that and let's just be the best version of ourselves and focus on that and be able to lend a helping hand, you know, to others, to strangers, and just to know that we're all going through it. Everybody's going through something. Everybody's dealt with something. We all have a story. Just let's just all really come together. And it sounds corny, but let's make the world a better place. Right, I mean, let's just keep having these conversations and let's make the world a better place.
Definitely. And I'm just going to add on, because I'm just learning that it's okay to have your bad days, your mornings, your time where you just don't want to deal with nobody. It's okay to take those moments yourself to reset, to get your equilibrium. Let's go ahead and get it all together. And we're going to continue to count the costs and make the change. I am Micah. Thanks for Crystal. Thanks to Crystal. She's been filling in for Rebecca, who is on a little hiatus. So thanks, Crystal. Rebecca, we love you, girl. Jonathan, thanks for coming on. And I'm pretty sure we will talk to you soon. Until next week, guys, we'll see you. Peace, love, and blessings.
And that brings us to the end of yet another insightful episode of Trauma is Expensive. I'm signing off on behalf of your host, Micah Bravery, reminding all you brave souls to continue counting the cost and making the change. Don't forget to visit www.traumaisexpensive.com, a dynamic space for understanding, healing, and transformation, where we fuel the journey to turn pain into progress. Until we meet again, stay resilient, stay empowered, and remember the mantra, count the cost and make the change. Thank you for being part of the conversation. We bid you farewell until next time.